You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Selva from Forest Grove. I support KBOO Community Radio because of the important multicultural and diverse programming that is offered, including those about transgender rights and my favorite news program, Native News Radio. Join me in supporting KBOO Community Radio. You can go to the website or donate through the KBOO app. Thanks.
Welcome to the Talking Earth. We're doing this on Cinco de Mayo because KBOO will air. Patrick Bocard is here, my engineer, and we are doing this outside of the studio. But it will be 10 p.m. on May 10th. And why is Cinco de Mayo important, Patrick?
It's well, it's
not to get
it's
drunk.
It's not Mexico's Independence Day, but doesn't it celebrate a defeat right after? Oh,
well, when they got rid of the French, see.
Was it the French or the Spanish?
The French.
More about it than I do.
I don't care about knowing anything. I just want us to move the program along and. And you know what, we've got the time here, and I want you to chime in because I'm half blind. It's 7:07. That's great. So here, let's the Talking Earth with my engineer Patrick Bocard, who we will have a dialogue, and I have a cataract on my left eye, and I'm not able to read so well, but we're going to play a lot of stuff and. And Patrick is going to do his science fiction stuff. I mean, he knows about, and we're going to talk about archetypes a little bit. So let's, Patrick, I'm going to go over here and put this on.
Okay.
Because I think that it if that gets in the way. Okay, that's Billie Holiday. Exactly what I want to do, but we're going to do something with Cinco de Mayo. We're fine. Are we all right, Patrick?
Yeah, we're fine. Oop. Oh, no, you're not.
And we're going to. What? What about it? I'm going to kick it over.
Oh, not much.
This room is a septic. So we're going to do a Mother's Day program, and I've got some stuff on that, but My mother died in 2000. When did your mother die?
My mother is alive.
Are you happy about that?
I am very happy about that. That's why I'm knocking on wood, Walt.
Oh, how old is your mom?
We don't ask those kind of questions.
Well, I know you don't ask women how old they are. But
no, you don't.
Where does your mother live then?
She splits time with my dad between here at the coast of Oregon and New York.
Well, your family is well off and they can...
We're fortunate.
Yeah, okay.
It's amazing what you can do on a librarian and school teacher's pension from New York.
So the two of them had the New York pension and then the school teacher's pension.
So everyone else in Oregon's really jealous of me at the moment.
Because you're a rich boy.
I'm not rich. We went from being lower middle class to being upper middle class. And then I decided to go work at a record store and make no money.
Well, and we won't name the store, but we'll talk about it if you want. But
no, that's fine.
We're not going to talk about the cats. We'll talk about the cats. The hell with it.
My cats are doing fine.
Okay. So this is an old-fashioned woman ranchero record for Cinco de Mayo. I love Mexican people, and I hate Anglos who and the Trump administration, even the Biden, are terrorizing people at the border. So let's hear a little more of this, and then we'll. Her name is Lola Beltran, and when I wrote Malinoche many years ago, this is the real ranchero. This is for Cinco de Mayo. You know, they love to howl, the Mexicans. I don't know what that means, but the revolution, I don't know. This is a beautiful old record. Oh yeah, make sure you get that one. What a set of lungs, huh? Yeah. Viva la revolución! Viva Mexico! That's nice. They love to yip like coyotes. It's fun. Ranchero music. We know life. I could translate it, but I'm going to bring it down, and I want to talk about. It's beautiful, though.
It is.
Yeah. You want a little more of it, yo. My people who are listening to this, I'm blind in one eye and can't see out of the other. With a cataract, so it's not about my health. It'll be taken care of, but. Boop. That's it. We're done. Boop. So, Patrick, it's never been about my ego. It's been that. It's interesting. I think we'll bring Borges in here. What's interesting about it, because he became progressively blind, and the deal is, It's interesting at my age, which is I'll be 80 July 4th. I don't care who knows. I'm a 4th of July guy. But I never thought my left eye would be half blind. I was mugged on Grand Avenue, down by the taboo sex parlors, and I had a wonderful studio space down there. But I was going home, and somebody grabbed me behind and they smashed me to the ground, and my left eye and my part of my eye socket. It was very interesting because I was basically unconscious, and what PO'd me was the meat wagon. It's called, come on, emergency whatever, and they take you over to Emmanuel Hospital to. So I woke up in there cursing, and the doctor said, well, you got to watch out. You can't fall down at your drunk age. But what had happened was, I remember the black hands on my throat. And what's fascinating about all this emergency stuff, the ambulance had to go 1 mile away. Then they tried to charge me $950. $950. And I said, show me the police report. Show me the police report. I didn't call in because I was out of it, you know. And $950, that's what they charge you. You better to go in a taxi if you got a problem. Just go in a taxi. They'll respond. Have you ever had any major serious traumas like that, or yeah, that's a trauma center over there at Emmanuel. That's where they take you for gunshots.
I've never been shot. Been mugged, but I was not beaten up to a point where I,
you weren't unconscious yet.
No, I ran away. They got my wallet and they ran away.
Oh, they got your wallet. Oh,
yeah, and that was like in New York. In my hometown, which is not exactly a crime.
Well, it's not exactly area. Portland, Oregon, but.
Well, Farmingdale is not exactly crime central in New York. It's suburbs. But,
yeah, we brought that up, and I really like you to talk about your New York year.
Yeah, like the most traumatic thing was having eggs thrown at me after I left the New Eurekan Theater.
New Eurekan. Oh, you know, New Eurekan poets we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, it was like a play we went to. It wasn't very good. My friend and I went there and we were like not really that into it. And we just took off. And it was a weird night. And we're leaving and we're walking down the street and this guy's throwing eggs at us. And he's throwing eggs at random people on the street. And it kept missing, but it was coming close. So we just, we warned people when we were walking out.
Well,
So that wasn't really traumatic. It was just a really weird night,
And I kind of want some of these real experiences, and I want to ask you if you've had a real experience at the record store and things like that.
I tried stopping a shoplifter, or I tried to get this guy to go back inside because it beeped while he was walking out, and he just shoved me and then ran off.
Well,
so stuff like that's happened. I've never been actually.
I used to work on Skid Road, so I, we were told not to chase shoplifters; just let them run away.
Yeah.
I don't know if your record store does that, but.
They kind of. No, I don't know. I will not say what we do or don't do on that. I don't know.
Okay, well, let's. Stop then. I cannot read too well, but I'm a fan of Jorge Luis Borges, and we discussed it off sound here, but they call him a magic realism. Well, magic realism, I know, Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Julio Cortazar. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Blow Up. Did you ever see that? It was from an issue.
I never saw Blow Up, but I did read.
Go ahead, talk about it.
What's that story that he's famous for? It's not Axolotl.
What are you calling the story that Julio Cortazar? Go ahead.
Yeah, he has a story called, I think it's Axolotl. It's about a salamander, like this big kind of weird looking salamander.
Well, no, you love that, monsters.
That this guy goes and watches, and he eventually becomes one.
Well, you know, actually, the great book that he is famous for, and it's quite a conceit, is called Hopscotch. And you can read different chapters in different sequences. And the story changes. Now, have you ever heard that? It's brilliant. Julio Cortazar, Hopscotch. I recommend it very much. And but you don't have to read consecutive 1, 2, 3, 4. You can do 1, 5, 7, and 8. And I don't know if the story really... you know, changes that much, but I guess maybe it does.
Maybe the ending does.
Yeah, possibly that's where it went.
Yeah,
well. It's quite a conceit, a literary conceit. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I love Borges. He wrote Gaucho stories, and he wrote, he was head of the Buenos Aires library, and he should have got the Pulitzer or the Nobel Prize, but they didn't want to give it because he was an Anglophile, meaning he loved Edgar Allan Poe, Omar Khayyam, Edward First Fitzgerald, and what I have here is called Una Personal Antologia. And I'm going to ask Patrick to read a little bit of this, but I translated, I just hope I can, Christ, I can do this. So as he was growing older and progressively blind, and actually what he did, he loved Edgar Allan Poe so much that he went to Baltimore, and he even though he was blind, he wanted to pay homage to Poe. Yeah. And every year a woman would bring roses and a bottle of wine for Edgar Allan Poe. So Curtis, you're just, I am half blind, but I'm going to try to read this in a very passionate way, and then obviously this poem, he is blind, and I'm half blind, but what the hell happened with the flashlight? So let's see if I can do this. A Blind Man by Jorge Luis Borges. I don't know what face looks at me. When I look at the face in the mirror, so he can't even look at himself, I don't know what, come on, Curtis, I need my flashlight, where the hell is it, but anyway, I actually, ad lib here for a minute.
You want me to finish?
No. You can finish. Yes, is my translation. But what I was asking you is he considered a science fiction writer? It's right here. Go for it. I'll find my flashlight. It's interesting to be half blind. Ray Charles.
I don't know what face looks at me.
Go ahead. You read it.
The face in the mirror. I don't know what image the old one seeks in wordless and now weary anger. Slow in my darkness, with hand I explore my invisible features. A flash of light lances me. I have glimpsed your hair, which is color of ash and even of gold. I repeat that I've lost only the vain surface of things. The consolation is from Milton and Brave, but also I think of Letters and Roses. I think that if I could see my face, I'd know who I am on this rare afternoon.
Okay. And well, you're doing very well, and I can't find my flashlight, but I'm not worried. So this is what? The Rubaiyat, meaning Omar Khayyam, the tent maker. And this is all about archetypes. And Borges was, and Plato and others were deeply into the collective unconscious. So that is a very tight poem. Go for it.
Return to my voice, the metrics of Persia, to remember that time is the diverse web of avid dreams that we are, and that the secret dreamer disperses. Repeat to affirm that the fire is ash, the flesh dust, the river the fleeting image of your life and my life that slowly leaves us suddenly. Again tell us that the arduous monument which pride erects is like the wind that passes, and to the inconceivable light of he who endures, a century is a moment. Return to warn that the gold nightingale sings of a single moment on the sonorous apex of night, and that the miserly stars won't waste their treasure. Return, moonlight diverse, your hand writes, as the moon returns in blue, twilight to your garden, the same moon in thy garden searches for you in vain. Beneath the moon of tender evenings, let your humble example be cisterns, in whose watery mirror are repeated the tiny eternal archetypes of self. How the moon of Persia and the fading gold of desert sunsets return. Today is yesterday. You are the others whose face is the dust.
Repeat those last lines. They're very important, and you read that very well. Thank you very much for doing that.
I kind of botched a couple things, but...
No.
Today is yesterday. You are the others.
Today is yesterday.
Whose face is the dust. You are the dead.
Wow. Kind of a heavy ending there. Borges was great, and I'm going to give him another piece here because you're doing very well, and I can't find, and I'll put a piece of music on here, but this is this personal antologia, personal anthology. I want you to read a couple and respond. It is Everything and Nothing. See, he was anticipating his own death. Read a couple, just read some random lines through it and then go to the end. Everything and Nothing.
There was no one in him. Behind his face, even the poor paintings of the epoch show it to be unlike any other. And behind his words, which were copious, fantastic, and agitated, there was nothing but a bit of cold. A dream not dreamed by anyone. At first he thought that everyone was like himself, but the dismay shown by a comrade to whom he mentioned this vacuity revealed this error to him and made him realize forever that an individual should not differ from the species. At one time it occurred to him that he might find a remedy for his difficulty in books, and so he learned the small Latin, the less and less Greek, of which a contemporary spoke. Later, he considered he might find what he sought in carrying out one of the elemental rites of humanity, and so he let himself be initiated by Anne Hathaway in the long siesta hour of an afternoon in June. That is... Okay, can I just stop for a second?
Yeah, I would just say, comment on it.
So, this is bizarre because...
Anne Hathaway...
We think of Anne Hathaway as a...
Longfellow.
There was Anne Hathaway back then.
Yeah.
But the thing that's messed up is... Borges wrote a story called Pierre Menard, author of Don Quixote.
And you've read these, yeah, yeah.
In which, at one point, the narrator, who's just describing the literary career of Pierre Menard, whose goal was to write, what is it, the Cervantes bid to write the Quixote for all time.
That's right.
So, but he only succeeded in several paragraphs, which of course were the same words as the paragraphs in the original. But this is the thing, is that Borges' narrator quotes two passages which are the same, but because of the when they're actually written, the one by Menard is completely different, even though it says the same thing.
Actually, this guy should have got the Nobel Prize. He's absolutely brilliant. But
the hilarious thing is he accidentally did the same thing here, because now we know of an Anne Hathaway who's famous now.
Well, she's famous for...
starring in movies.
No, I think Anne Hathaway is relates to... gosh darn it.
Well, he didn't mean the actress who's
He didn't mean the actress. He meant Anne Hathaway is in The Scarlet Letter or something like that. Who wrote The Scarlet Letter? Help us.
No, I think it's supposed to be a random woman that got initiated.
Well, okay.
By Anne Hathaway in the long siesta hour of an afternoon in June. In other words, he slept with her.
Well, yeah, I mean, men sleep with women.
But he didn't
women,
find what
I
he
mean.
Was seeking. So instinctively, he had already trained himself in the habit of pretending he was someone, so it should not be discovered that he was no one. In London, he found the profession to which he had been predestined, that of actor, someone who on a stage plays at being someone else before a concourse of people who
you're right, it's Anne Hathaway,
to take him
actors,
for the, that other one. His histrionic work taught him a singular satisfaction, perhaps the first he had ever known. And yet, once the last line of verse had been acclaimed and the last dead man dragged off the stage, he tasted the hateful taste of unreality. He would leave off being Ferrex or Tamburlaine and become no one again. Thus beset, he took to imagining other heroes and other tragic tales. And so while his body complied with its bodily destiny in London body houses and taverns, the soul inhabiting that body was Caesar, unheeding the augur's warnings, and Juliet detesting the lark, and Macbeth talking on the heath with the witches who were also the fates. No one was ever so many men as that man. Like the Egyptian Proteus, he was able to exhaust all the appearances of being. Proteus was a god that was able to change
his shape. Yeah.
So Proteus. Where you're not sure if I actually shouldn't, not sure if you should say he. From time to time, he left, in some obscure corner of his work, a confession he was sure would never be deciphered. Richard states that in his one person, he plays many parts, and Iago curiously says, I am not what I am. The fundamental oneness of existing, dreaming, and acting inspired him, in him, several famous passages. He persisted in this directed hallucination for 20 years, but one morning he was overcome by a survey and horror of being all those kings who die by the sword and all those unfortunate lovers who converge, diverge, and melodiously expire. That same day he settled on the sale of his theater. Before a week was out, he had gone back to his native village where he had recuperated the trees and the river of his boyhood. Without relating them at all to the trees and rivers, illustrious with mythological allusion and Latin phrase, which his muse had celebrated. He had to be someone. He became a retired impresario who has made his fortune, who was interested in making loans and lawsuits and in petty usury. It was in character then, in this character, that he dictated the arid last will and testament we know, from which he deliberately excluded any note of pathos or trace of literature. Friends from London used to visit him in his retreat, and for them he would once more play the part of poet. History adds that before or after his death he found himself facing God and said, I, who have been so many men in vain, want to be one man, myself alone. From out of a whirlwind, the voice of God replied, I am not either. I dreamed the world the way you dreamed your work, my Shakespeare. One of the forms of my dream was you, who, like me, are many and no one. Now so that, it's actually Shakespeare. Of course.
No, that is Borges.
No, but Borges wrote that, but it was like the character of Shakespeare.
Well, no, you don't know who Borges is. Anybody listening to this show, that's why we put that in here. It's very important because...
Man, I got to read up on this thing. Wow.
734.
You blew my mind.
No, well, actually, that is one of the greatest conceptual Jungian archetypal writers in the history of the world.
Well, and it's, I mean, a lot of his stuff is just about being in nothingness.
Well, okay.
The important things of life.
No, we're going to run out of time.
If we're talking about Borges, we'll definitely run out of time. It's a garden.
It's 7:34, and we're going to stop.
It's a garden.
But we want people to know about Borges.
Yeah. And yeah, I consider him a fantasist, but I consider magical.
No, he's not fantasy. He's not fantasy.
What do you consider him?
I would say he's one of the greatest philosophers in the history of the world.
He's one of the greatest writers.
Well, as a philosophy, but I'm not going there. It's Mother's Day, so did you send your mother a postcard or something?
My wife sent my mom's the card that I got my mom in the mail today. So, thank you, Melissa.
Well, thank Melissa, but you know,
Hi, Mom.
The great. Hazel Hall died on Mother's Day, 1924, and her collected poems, and she is, good Lord, I am really disgrabbled here, but that's all right. The deal is that Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission made a wonderful poetry park. Have you been there at Northwest 22nd Place? And I was able to get... William Stafford to sign on saving the house. She had fallen down diphtheria, and she was a crippled seamstress, and she lived there with her sister Ruth, who took care of things, and Ruth was from Reed College and was in high school. It was very important. You can go to OSU Press, get the collected poems of Hazel Hall, and Hazel Hall was known nationally. Actually, Poetry Magazine in Chicago. Poetry Magazine in Chicago and Harriet Monroe. They had a falling out, but before they had the falling out, Harriet Monroe loved Hall's work. Her three books were... Curtains, about sewing. Walkers, and it's odd she couldn't walk. And then her last book, in which she challenged death. I wrote the definitive essay about Hazel Hall. But you know, it's probably a moderately priced book, the collected poems of Hazel Hall, and at OSU Press, Oregon State University Press, and they have a lot of. I want you to know this is a teaching program as well as a classical thing, and. I wrote No Frail Servant of Utility, the brief but brilliant career of feminist poet Hazel Hall. And what's intriguing about this, I think I can I read the last, well, oh God, I hate being half blind. It's annoying. I can't read this stuff. Patrick, why don't you read that if your eyes good enough right here? Hazel Hall, the collected poems.
A needle running in white
crepe de chine.
Is not the frail servant a utility it was designed to be. It is an arrow of silver sunlight plunging with a waterfall. And hands moving in white crepe de chine, are not slaves of the precedent that governs them. They are the crouching women of a fountain who have sprung from marble into life to bathe ecstatically in the brimming basin.
And you know what the brimming basin was? It was the four-quart fountain. Do you remember the women who were holding up down below? C.S. Wood is right down by Mercy Corps right now.
Okay.
And the bumps have taken it over and everybody's taken it over.
It's weird. It's like I'm
Oh, we'll read a few more points there and read toward the end and I say,
my candle burns at both ends. It will last the night. But ah, my foes and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light.
That's Edna St. Vincent Millay. Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't... Okay, that wasn't her. So
No. Just go to the end there and... and I make a summation of how important her life was. She was able to go up the Columbia River Gorge and Samuel C. Lancaster, the Columbia River Gorge, the old highway, was the first highway in America. Teddy Roosevelt opened it, and you should go on the old road. Just the freeway is all right, but to get back up there and back, but the old road. And what's our time at here, kiddo?
Not sure. Let me read another poem by her.
Go ahead.
You end with the
Go ahead. I want you to do that for Mother's Day.
I hope I shall remember the day I come to die, the welcome of this morning's down, this evening's goodnight sky. I hope I shall remember the kindly little star caught in tonight's mist-matted hair, which greeted me afar. And how, as I was watching, loving its little light, fleet as a dream it dropped and fell into the urn of night.
Isn't that beautiful poetry, though? Hazel Hull, the collected poems.
Yeah.
And I am challenged, I admit it, and I'm not going to worry about it. But you know, you can go over to the Pocket Park at Northwest 22nd Place, right next to the house she lived in with Ruth, her sister, and you should go there. It's on the National Historic Register. And you know, what I want to say is, Hull, even though she was a crippled seamstress, was an incredible American woman poet. I compare her to Edna St. Vincent Millay and Eleanor Wiley and others. And I think that, come on, Curtis. I think that I want to, Mother's Day. Remember your mother, take care of your mother. Your mother, I think, I'm going to do this because my mother died and, here's gonna talk about it here. Come on. Man, I'm insane. That's just totally insane. I don't like it. I'm going to do it. I spent the last 10 years of her life with her in Oregon City on the old Oregon Trail, and let's see what this and this is a little bit of blues just to introduce this.
Thank you. she leave me? People, I really would like to know.
Okay.
We're listening to Blue Monday on KBLO Radio, and I'm sitting in the old house in Oregon City. I want to call this tape. I guess it's wrong. Can't see a goddamn thing. Yeah, it's running. Anyway, I'm out here in Oregon City. My mother passed away April 16th, and
it's 2000.
My young friend Michael Menace, he put him on a freight train last night to go to Chicago. It was kind of scary, and I hope he gets back safely. It's a rainy day and green out here. The grass is deep and the lilacs are in bloom, and I'm looking at the memorial photographs on the wall of my mother. And so I want to call this tape Michael and my mother, because I think of both of them as family. And as I told young Michael, I want him to be like my son. I love him that much. I need new family, and losing my mother that I lived with for 10 years or more here in Oregon City on the Bravo Trail, it's been kind of moody and emotional. And so I'm going to read, I'm not getting any younger myself, 58 years old, be 59 here. Took a quick trip to New York City where the film about me, Pecknick Poet, was played at the Anthology Film Archives on May 3rd. You know, I realized, what have I been doing with the last 30 or 40 years of my life? So anyway, I'm just gonna read some things I wrote about Michael, and read some things about my mother before she died, and some Pioneer Cemetery verse. Tonight on KBOO at 10 o'clock, I've had a program for 30 years called The Talking Earth, along with Barbara Lamorticello. We're going to do Dawn's Song, the Gnostic tradition and poetry, talking about spirituality and light. So I don't know how well this is going to work, but listening to Utah Phillips this morning and Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind, I realized that I need to loosen up and do some tapes of my voice and my persona that will you know, last beyond just what's on down on paper. So I just want to read some of these poems and talk a little bit about things in my life at this time, as it goes through transition. All lives go through transition, and spirit and flesh meet in human beings, and some live and some pass on. Yeah, it was in July, around July 10th, in front of the Fellini's bar next to Satyricon on Northwest 6th, where I met this kid on a skateboard, came by, Mike Manis, and it was in front of the old Wino grocery store, which has become Fellini's, in which I wrote about in Malanoche and stuff. And I got to know Michael then, and he was born on Bastille Day, July 14th. He said he was a juggler, so I invited him to juggle fire in a little movie that we were, independent film we were making, that didn't work out, but it became the basis for the beginning of our friendship. The first poem I wrote was this. Mike Menace. This Holden Caulfield youth from Savannah, Georgia, was not mean or menacing at all. On his skateboard or in his person, he was charming, courteous, and kind, a juggler with poise and control, grown boy, almost man, with a sly smile, This look he gave me from the side, his eyes blue, large and cool, sort of approving being with me, liking an older man with white hair, electric libido, using too many words. When he juggled torches on fire at the Nehalem Bay Winery, saying, under one knee, under the other knee, pause, under the weenie and the high knee, spinning around perfectly to catch. I knew he was juggling my heart. His hands were holding up the planets in their starry pathways, keeping darkness from plummeting down around my soul. If he ever leaves me, I will die. It was magic to meet him on the street in front of Fellini's. We are artists for always, him juggling his things, me juggling my words. Warm, sentimental slop from my mouth, his mouth snuffing torches on fire, sparks of consciousness to light the mind and move worlds into motion. Well, we swam on the Malala River, and we went to movies at Clinton Street Theater, and he had a variety of friends. Michael is a collective kind of person, friends of the anarchists and the skateboard kids and, you know, the performers. But he ended up in my studio, and but you know, and he's been with other friends his age and stuff, and obviously girls and all of that. The reason where my mother comes in is that in the summer of last year, Michael and Angela came by the you know, to go swimming, and they we went swimming on the Malala River, and I call it the perfect day, the week following the Perseid meteor shower. I was tired from 2 days of summer fun, drunken sociability, and then it happened. Mike Menes, whom I'd been pining away over, the young blonde juggler and spirit, independent spirit, called me. He wanted to go swimming. John and Angela I invited to go along. John was making a mock epic Toddzilla. The day began sublime, capable of evoking skinny dipping. Am I capable of evoking skinny dipping, smoking pot? The greenest, coolest swimming hole down the bank on the Malala. When I said to Mike and Angela, take off your swim shorts and put your butt in the bubbling rapids over there, where water aerated upward. And naked Mike did a double somersault and sat next to me on the rocks and smoked a J. The reflections in the water were enchanting, despite garbage, broken glass, and discarded tennis shoes. We took a whole plastic bag full of trash out of there, an ecological nature ethic. Leave it cleaner than when you found it. And Mike from Georgia exclaimed, I finally am feeling like I'm alive in the cool green water in this beautiful spot on Earth. He felt like moving to Oregon from Georgia permanently and bringing his trucker dad. And so we went up to Sunburst Canyon, and we drove in and at this place where there's a beautiful ribbed rocks and a perfect clear pool, and this circular Mayan moon goddess face in the wall above the pool. Mike Menes had never seen anything like it. I stripped naked again and swam to the ribs waiting for him. A minute before, he'd been climbing the rock overhang and suicidally decided to jump down on the gravel, river rocks cutting his bare foot, a skateboard boy with scars. And I knew I had to protect him from himself at 21. He'd leap into the void. And we were both naked on the ribs, the goddess's face above us. And though the swimming hole was in shadow, he watched an ant, and I said, on a sunny day, the rocks hold the heat after dark. So when you come out of the water, they'll stay warm. He vowed to come back and stay longer. Shamans sacrificed virgins here to the gods, I opined, and Mike agreed. And Mike was a lovely, nude, handsome, spontaneous youth reveling in water and greenery and the gifts of summer. Oh, how sensitive and emotionally responsive this boy is to the natural scene. On our way back, we stopped at Clark Cemetery, a favorite pioneer one, past Meadowbrook near Christmas tree farms and red barns and red pumice soil like in Georgia. I showed them the hand-cut old black and white headstones with hands shaking in farewell and birds and dates and scenes from beyond the grave. We smoked pot there on our backs in the raised hill cemetery with a thin crescent moon. I realized the goddess had been playing out my fate with Mike and the others, no stopping it. He holds my hand as we hug on the ground, close as dead people. Mike, will you bury my body here in this peaceful place? Yes, I will, Walt. I love you, Mike, I think, almost out loud. He shook, and we all love each other, a little high, and the pink and blue sunset with its ethereal delicate clouds and the thumbnail of the crescent moon are beautiful beyond belief. Can I carry this imagery and these magic moments into my next lifetime? Damn, I'm in love with these young friends. I'm in love with the place Oregon and sharing it with these receptive young persons. I'll show you my mother's house, I say to them. She's in bed. It's surrounded by trees. And we invade the place. We go out in the backyard and look at the sky, see if any of the Perseid meteors are flying. They enjoy the old house, photos of the family on the wall. I showed Michael the painting I did for him called The Juggler. A nude androgynous figure tosses fiery torches, while through a transparent window frame, a crescent-faced moon beams approvingly. He's impressed, knows I love him. You broke my heart, Mike, not getting in touch with me for weeks. I didn't mean to, Walt. I don't know what I'm doing from one day to the next. Laying his head in Angela's lap on the mattress, drinking Strawberry Hill, Mike despises beer. He broke down and cried, sobbing. Angela and I comfort him, talking about my mother and longevity of family, jogged memories. I haven't seen my mother at all. She's a little crazy, ex-speed freak. He was emotionally shaken. What a sensitive young guy. The backyard is dark. I'll call your mother on the phone. You should spend some time with her, Mike, even if it doesn't work out the way you want it to. And we stay in the backyard in the dark, and we go inside in the kitchen, you know, in the kitchen. And so when I take them down to their pickup without proper registration or up-to-date plates, I warn, I think you'd better just get out on the freeway and drive straight to Portland. Oregon City cops are not friendly. We'd been ready to shoot pool at the Trails End Saloon, but it was too late on a Sunday night, and I doubt we'd fit into the redneck scene. I'm going to be around for another month, Mike promised. We'll do some more things together, Walt. We all hugged. He kissed me lightly on the cheek, and I wonder if these ragged pages do justice to the perfection of such a summer day. No, summer is my favorite season, and magic is its message. The goddess be praised.
Okay, we stopped there. And you know, I don't know, that was kind of personal, but I've had so many experiences in Oregon, and I think you must have had some. You've been swimming, you've been outdoors in Oregon, Patrick Bouchard?
Have no, you? Not at all.
Why not?
I'm kidding. I have been outdoors.
Isn't it it's been an amazing place that's sort of being overwhelmed. I want us to, we're getting close to the end here, and I'm going to play something here, but listen, Patrick, what's happening? Barbara Lamortigiello called me on the phone. Barbara's doing Zoom. She's doing Zoom. A lot of people are doing.
And she was able to put in a show last month.
Yeah. Talk about that.
And this
Barbara Lamortigiello is for you.
And this month, Dan Raphael's doing a show a week.
On the third. Yeah.
On the third Monday that has, and he did it through Zoom too, I guess. And he had Armin Tolentino. Who is...
I don't know this person.
He's from Vancouver, I believe. He's poet laureate of Clark County, according to Dan. I think I might actually be a real musician. And they also is having Brittany Corrigan, and Casey Bush. And you know Casey
Bush. I was wondering what happened to Casey Bush.
He's still around. He's going to be on Talking Earth in a week. And so it was Brittany Corrigan.
And the Talking Earth is at 10 p.m. They're at 10 p.m.
10 to 11 p.m. Dan, I'm sure, will read some of his poetry, too.
Well, you've been doing this a long time, and you were Barbara's engineer, and she's back in the saddle. She's very ambitious.
She's at the point where she doesn't need I barely help her.
Well, you know, you've helped me enormously, and you call your mother. I'll call my mother psychically. She used to come in my dreams. And a very interesting program on locus focus, Barbara Bernstein, just happened the other day. And it was she does an environmental show. And I never really thought about it. All of this salvage logging, all this industrial cutting down of our trees. Trees can save planet Earth. And Barbara, the woman, Suzanne, and she's an activist. What she said was, and she'd just written a book called Finding the Mother Tree. So the tree roots and the fungi and all of that are under the earth. And when you cut down the old mother tree, the energy, 40% of the energy goes through the network of the roots and the fungi. It's very interesting that I consider Mother Earth Madre Tierra, and I wanted to bring this up. We will never use the word MF again. I'm calling it, if you're going to curse, Mother Fracker. You do not frack your Mother Earth, meaning you do not poison the water table and everything. So anybody who does that is a Mother Fracker. And you put chemicals in there. So really, this theme keeps coming back and forth to me about saving the planet Earth. And you know, trees can do it. They have the power to do it if we don't cut down the Amazon rainforest, if we don't clear cut, if we don't salvage logging, if we let the trees sequester carbon and have their diversity, we can stop climate change. I totally believe that. And I recommend Locus Focus, the wonderful program that Barbara Bernstein did on KVU. And what I also recommend is that you support KVU. It's a very unusual station, and it takes a while to learn how to listen to it, because there are so many community people on there. And Patrick Bocard and I are in my room here, and we've been doing this. And how's the show going, Patrick? I'm going to go out with some Billie Holiday or something.
Let's go out with some Billie Holiday right now.
Or would you want Langston Hughes?
I like Langston Hughes, but if you have Billie Holiday set up, let's go with Billie Holiday.
How close are we to the end? I thank you for coming over here.
We're very close.
I'm very blind, and
it is later than you think.
How late is it? Why don't you tell me what you've been doing a little bit, and Melissa?
I've been working and hanging out with my cats, and Melissa's been working, and that's basically it.
Actually, we won't do Billie Holiday. We will do
Joan Baez.
Joan Baez for the immigrants trapped at the border, and we're gonna go out here with, I hope. Is that a rap? Are they sending it in the phone business? Take care of your family and friends. Take care of your mother. Give her a call on the phone.
Support KVU. You've been listening to Talking Earth.
And
this is KVU Portland.
I hate to be as lame as I've been, but I actually feel that little memoir about the juggler and swimming on the Mulatto River is the beauty of Oregon. Oregon has been a very magical, special place. And I owe my life to Oregon. And I owe my life to Patrick and Barbara and KVU Community Radio. Just, how do they do that? They go online, and with the kbo.fm /give.
Yes.
You take care of, there's no radio station like this who would put a joker like me on for 48 years or 49. Love you all out there. Wear a mask. Get the shot. I'm going to get a Johnson & Johnson one shot.
I got a shot.
Well, tell us about that. We'll turn it down.
Next time, when after I've gotten the second one.
Oh, you're going to get two shots.
Yes. Everyone stay safe out there.
We, this program, it takes its own form. It may be a glitch or whatever. I believe in radio that is whatever happens, happens. And Patrick can draw me back in line, and I hope. Love you, Patrick. Thank you so much. I love Barbara LaMorticella, and she's born again. And look for Dan Raphael, 10 p.m.
Next week.
Not this Monday, but the one after.
Hi, this is Clarity. I live in Eastern Oregon, and I've been a long-time listener. Cable.